Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. I wanted to talk to you today. Do you use a password manager? That's a question for you. I've been using a password manager for just a little bit of time. There's a few out there. I think there's the File Vault or like there's a whole system in the Macintosh program. I bet that probably works. There's OnePassword, which does like a lot of the file or the password management for you. And then the one that I use is LastPass, which I've been using for a while now. And I think it works pretty well. There's a lot of password generation that it can do if you're interested in trying to get some heavy top secret hashed password that you can put in there, have remembered specific to each of those sites. And then you use like a master password and LastPass, like one that you will remember. And then it gives you access to these secure tokens that you use to apply your hashed password to the site that you're trying to log into. It opens up some vulnerabilities and security depending on how secure you keep that front door to your security system. But it really does provide you some opportunities to go back in and change passwords to sites or understand what the passwords were that you did when you managed them. So definitely something to keep in mind. Keep in mind a password manager. I don't know. Interesting stuff out there. There's a little debate about, do you want a password manager? Do you want hard to remember passwords? Do you want an easy to remember password that you keep super secret? All these little variances and nuances and security in the digital age. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But right now, one of the leading trends is using a password manager. So check it out.
You can see more of my work at billynewmanphoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon. I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there.
Today I'm talking about a couple of the photographs that are going up online. And yesterday, way successful. Got a bunch of content stuff done yesterday, but edited a bunch of photographs. Tried to cut on a couple videos, but that only goes so fast. But I think I got a photo or a podcast wrapped up. I got a video made. I got a photo edited and posted and stuff. So I don't know. I dig it when I'm kind of jumping in and getting all the pieces together each day. That's kind of cool. I'm messing around with Anchor a little bit. I don't know how long-lasted that'll be, but at least in an effort to promote this podcast. So if anyone had actually, which I doubt, if anyone had ever followed a link over from Anchor to check out this podcast, let me know sometimes. But yeah, it's one of those kind of budding, well, I don't know what budding means when it's not 2007 anymore, but it's one of those budding social networks that has a handful of people that work on it or that follow it. But I'm not really sure how successful overall it is. It's sort of like an Instagram app, but if the post you make was an audio post or like a podcast, like literally just like me talking right now, I think it's about the same thing. So, something sort of similar to that. And because it's sort of like this podcasting stuff, that's why I've been getting into it, but, trying to do a little audio update post over there each day. I think you can check that out. And, I don't know. It's okay, but trying to talk about some photo stuff over there also. Today I'm in my truck and I'm working on a bunch of stuff on my laptop. I'm trying to edit this photograph. One of them is of like our camp, or you know, like when we're getting ready to go on our backpacking trip. And one of them is kind of the layout of a bunch of the gears. We're trying to pack it and get it ready that morning, which is always like a really tough part of the backpacking trip. I don't know how much backpacking you guys do, but especially when you're kind of transitioning from two states, one of them being car camping, where you're sort of loaded out for an extended period of time with more heavy equipment that you're kind of loading and carrying around. So you kind of pack for the car, but then you sort of change out when you go backpacking. You know, if you're car camping a couple of days and then jumping out and going backpacking, you sort of have to reassess and then sort of repack everything that you would need to get through a backpacking trip. And it's time consuming, you know, when you have to kind of do that swap over. But anytime you're packing for the backpacking trip stuff, it's kind of, I don't know if it's frustrating, but it's a little bit about like, oh man, like, do I take this? Do I not take this? Is it just going to be weight on my back that I carry, that I end up using or participating with, you know, this item or this thing for just 1% of my time there, you know? And then sometimes even still on short trips, that definitely have, especially on short trips, short backpacking trips, like overnight trips, 2-day trips, I'd really recommend you put everything you want to carry in a plastic sack, you know, like something that's like a gallon big. But I swear, if it's one day, if it's one overnight trip, you should eat before you go. Maybe people ate Ike and like that. I don't know if I want to eat a ton of food, but you should leave so that you don't need to eat right away. You should hang out, you know, have a meal ready, and then have a power bar on the next day or the way back or something like that. But, and, you know, some spare food and whatnot. But a lot of spare stuff, a lot of extra stuff, a lot of delicacy stuff. It's tough when you're backpacking, but you always want to do it until you start hiking the weight of it. Then you want to ditch it. Then you want to throw it out the window or, you know, off the trail, right?
You can check out more information at BillyNewmanPhoto.com. You can go to BillyNewmanPhoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at BillyNewmanPhoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it if you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon. That's patreon.com/BillyNewmanPhoto. And I'm happy with the A7R so far. In fact, I've been looking at trying to pick up a battery grip for it. You know, I did a wedding this weekend, which was great. Shooting a wedding, and those are really fun events to go through. And the A7R did a pretty good job in almost every capacity. I love the low light of it. The way the sensor works is really great. Super high quality. All of those things, they fit the mark for what I need. But it was interesting. I was noticing that in low light, the autofocus for that camera, it really doesn't function in the way that I need it to, or I'm missing some stuff that I really want. And that's where I see the real benefit in some of the older systems. I mean, even like contrast-based autofocus systems that were in the Nikon or Canon systems for the last like 15 or 20 years are really superior to what I'm seeing in some of the expression of what the early Sony autofocus stuff can do. You know, it's like in focus, right? You're looking at a frame, it's in focus, your autofocus point is on the thing, it's a contrast point, there's plenty of light on it. You go to autofocus and then your lens just spins out and it does nothing for like 4 seconds. It just spins out to infinity. You see just blurriness. You lose the moment completely. It comes kind of back in. Maybe it finally grabs focus and then you take the picture, but you kind of miss everything. Or you just, I don't know, like there's a lot of times where you're waiting for the camera to focus, but really should just be like, pull up to your eye. It sees focus. You hit it, grab it, click it, go. I'm having a harder time with that than what I thought I might. And I think some of that could be because of the lack of the phase detection autofocus system that like the newer A7R II has, or the A7 II, A7S II, A9, or yeah, A9, right? Yeah, that's a Sony one. And like a lot of the new Canon cameras, they have this phase detection system. It's supposed to be some better multiplexing system of finding autofocus, but there used to be systems that worked pretty good. Like my D3 had 53 autofocus points and it could pull up, something like that, but it, you know, it had plenty of autofocus points and it could grab your autofocus point even in pretty low light. It could kind of get, oh, that's at infinity, or oh, that's pretty close to right next to me, so I'll stay there. And so it's interesting kind of learning how that behaves. But overall, the photos from the wedding came out really well. A lot of the stuff worked out very nicely. I've been really happy with it. But another thing that I noticed is with running a camera as a device, like more like an iPad or like more like your phone, you know, where it's got some screen on a lot of the time, it's got processing stuff going on, it's moving gigabytes and gigabytes of data to a card, it's just drawing from the battery almost constantly. I mean, like during a wedding, I guess, to kind of think of power consumption like this, I wrote 48 gigabytes of data to SD cards. And so that's going to take some amount of battery energy, you know, stored energy, to write all that data to a card. And so in that capacity, I kind of do get that it would take a good bit of power to write that much information down, to capture it and then write that much information, if you think about everything that it has to do. So in that way, and then run a screen and, you know, run the processing and run it visually and all that. So I kind of forgive it in a capacity. But what I noticed, though, is that I really did go through a couple batteries
shooting in just sort of a regular fashion at this wedding for most of the day. It was like a full day of shooting, but it really was burning through those batteries pretty quickly. Like, you look at it, you're like, oh, whoa, I just used like 10% in a pretty short amount of time. And so with that, I was kind of thinking, and as it's been the plan for a long time for just, best use case for professionalism, what I really want to do is get the battery grip that goes in accompaniment with the A7R. And the battery grip, I think, it's like a Sony piece that fits. Everybody's seen a battery grip before, but you know, the one where you can throw the two camera batteries into the battery grip, you can get an extended amount of life from your camera that way. And you get like the portraits, or what is it, like the vertical shutter release, you know, so you can flip your camera up and shoot in portrait mode. And, I like the size of it, the look of it. It'll be an awesome kind of compact, professional. What is it? Not SLR. I keep wanting to say professional SLR, but an interchangeable lens camera. An interchangeable lens camera. That's rolling right off my tongue, isn't it? it's going to be interesting. I want to go for the battery grip, though, and I think that could kind of solve some of the problems that I'm having with battery usage issues of the camera kind of coming up dead after 2 or 3 hours or whatever it is. So, I don't know. I've heard plenty of other people in relationship to wedding photography kind of complain or grouse a little bit about some of the features that are associated, or some of the things that make the workflow of wedding work, of a wedding shoot, go by a little bit more difficultly with a featured camera like the A7R. But I've heard of people that are really into it too, so you know, it seems like a couple different things. But low light autofocus, definitely an issue on that camera. I can definitely tell that there's some stuff it doesn't do. Now, so with that, and with the concept of like what I really like to shoot, or you know, like kind of still moving things, or the landscapes, low light, fine art stuff, if I try and get into that more, I wouldn't really run into that same kind of problem with as much repetition, because you know, you're not shooting a high volume of frames, you're not shooting an event-based situation. So it's kind of a different sort of scenario, and you don't really seem to, you're wanting to manual focus and take time and take multiple frames of the same thing in some of those more set up fine art situations or landscape situations. Like, you're trying to take your time in those, whereas in with event and wedding photography, that kind of process, it's really fast. You're trying to move different moving elements into different places and get photographs of them, and you're just doing a lot all at one time over a short amount length of the amount of time of the event. So, I don't know. It was all right. I did had a great time at the wedding. Saw a bunch of people, had a bunch of food, got a bunch of great photos, brought them home, started processing them. That's a really interesting part of, you know, going through like a big batch of photos. And I've gotten kind of used to that over the time of getting through a big batch of photos, but it is always sort of overwhelming when you're like, wow, that's a lot. That's like a whole big data project I got to go through now. Like, you don't realize like how much it really takes to get through a bunch of stuff when you finish it.
Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on billynewmanphoto.com. A few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts, all pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at billynewmanphoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.